Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. Looking forward to getting joined by Jesse Kelly, Supreme Leader, Twitter provocateur, at about 8:35 this morning. Always a really fun conversation with Jesse, so stick around for that.
Yeah, he's filled with hot takes.
The hottest
of
all the hot takes.
No, man, I appreciate it. We talked about it earlier. I appreciate the fact that... there's a level of fearlessness that Jesse Kelly has. It's on Twitter, but at least he says who he is.
Right.
You got to give the man credit for at least using his real name, Drew. Because I don't know if you know, there's a lot of individuals out there who are on Twitter and they don't say who they really are.
What?
Yeah, they're anonymous.
You can do that on Twitter?
Yeah, and sometimes they have the most egregious attacks, but they refuse to go and say who they are. Some people, like me. We'll call them cowards. Yeah. Big old cowards. And some people, also like me, would think that there might just be drunk Russian trolls, which I'm convinced of as well.
Speaking of drunk Russian trolls.
Trump tweets.
Trump tweets.
Trump tweets.
Yeah, yeah.
Trump tweets.
Trump tweets.
He always tweets.
What now?
Oh, sh**.
3 hours ago, the president tweeted... The Senate Intelligence Committee, then in all caps, there is no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. Yelled that for emphasis.
Okay.
Since he did tweet that in all caps.
Gotcha. I gotcha.
The witch hunt continues.
It's true.
We're going to need a Representative Ilhan Omar tweet intro. Get your brainstorming wheels turning.
You had a good one, I think. Was it Ilhan Omar that you had? I remember there was some tune that you were singing.
I know. Something popped up, and I was like, it's going to come back around.
I hope so.
The brain will go and find it at some point in time. Because you're right, I had landed on something really good.
Just a couple minutes ago, she quoted a tweet from Time Magazine saying that President Trump says Representative Omar's apology for Israel tweets was lame. She quoted that tweet and said, "Hi, Donald Trump, you have trafficked in hate your whole life." Whole life.
His whole life?
Whole life.
Even when he was a baby?
Against Jews, Muslims, indigenous, immigrants, black people, and more. I learned from people impacted by my words. When will you?
Boy, they are really good at
his whole life.
Not denying. Do they not realize what they're doing? Without even getting into the ridiculousness of her accusation.
Which is absolutely ridiculous.
Right, absolutely. But it's an admission on her end. It's basically her saying, fine, I'm hateful, but so have you. But you've been hateful your whole life. That's essentially what she's... She's admitting to. That's what's amazing to me about this, is that these individuals serving in office, they're not denying any of this stuff. Klobuchar hasn't denied any of the stuff.
No.
She's doubled down on it. Yeah.
And this idea that, when Trump wasn't ever running for president, everybody loved this guy. There was no hatred or animosity. You could find some people that maybe thought he was a bit of a clown or a bit of a buffoon based on his persona through his TV appearances and things like that. But there was none of this animosity. He would receive awards from the NAACP. I would argue that he has done more to better the lives of Jews, Muslims, indigenous immigrants, black people, and more through his work as in the private sector with all of the people that he's employed throughout the years.
He's
certainly done more than Ilhan Omar has ever done.
We were talking last hour about the fact that the word is that the president may sign on to this this bipartisan bill working through Congress to avoid the shutdown on Friday that'll only include $1.4 billion instead of the $5.7 billion. That would mean only about 55 miles of the 210 necessary of the wall that he said he was going to build would be built. And we've been expressing, sort of the big question here is whether or not he's going to try to move forward and find another way to go and fund the rest of the wall. Let's go and talk with Pete in Clearwater. Welcome to Twin Cities News Talk. Pete, thanks for holding on. What are your comments this morning?
Hey, thanks, guys. Yeah, so on the whole border wall stuff, if the wall is such a buzzword that's stopping everybody from, it's scaring them and, it's a wall, blah, blah, blah. With the 210 miles, I haven't heard anybody. So I'm curious, why is nobody talking about actually taking troops bringing them to our physical border and, you know, 200 miles, how many troops could we employ for $1.4 billion?
Right.
And, like, just physically guard the border.
The reality on that, and thanks for the call, Pete, the reality on that is that that's largely up to the states. To go and enact that. That's what the National Guard is for. It's what the National Guard has done. And put it, we have an enforcement arm there already. We have Immigration and Customs Enforcement. We have Border Patrol. We already have those individuals there. So there's no need to deploy the military out to the border. What we're talking about is something long-term.
There may be sections where, you know, from time to time that could be appropriate based on, you know, what's happening in those sectors. It's certainly been done before.
Sure.
And it has proven to be extremely effective. You know, I've said all along that I would rather see more Border Patrol, more bodies, more vehicles, you know, than a wall. But I'm not the president and the president wants a wall.
Yeah. Well, we're looking for a long-term solution here, you know, and the optics don't bode well. And let's be honest, that's really bad optics to start sending military down there. No, we're talking about the funding, getting something permanent there where it doesn't exist and or where it's been pushed down or where it wasn't built before. Let's go here. A couple of different articles. Senate has uncovered, Trump's tweets a moment ago. After 2 years and 200 interviews, the Senate Intelligence Committee is approaching the end of its investigation into the 2016 election, having uncovered no direct evidence of a conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russia.
What?
According to both Democrats and Republicans on the committee. Investigators, of course, disagree along party lines when it comes to the implications of a pattern of contacts that they have documented between Trump associates and Russians. Contacts that occurred before, during, and after Russian intelligence operatives were seeking to help Donald Trump. Senator Richard Burr, Republican out of North Carolina, said, "If we write a report based upon the facts that we have, then we don't have anything that would suggest there was collusion by the Trump campaign and Russia."
There you go. And you should write a report based on the facts that they have, you know, but what a lot of people want to hear is, if we write a report based on what we want to believe,
right,
then we could maybe create the implication that there was some collusion because some of these meetings took place and they might have talked about certain things, but we don't have any facts, therefore you don't have any collusion.
So you got Richard Burr, who's putting himself out there, saying who he is, not anonymously.
Right.
Democrat Senate investigators who spoke to NBC News on a condition of anonymity.
Wait, what?
Yeah. They're like Twitter people.
Huh?
Yeah. Well, they don't, most of the left on Twitter don't bother to go and say who they are. So why should we have to?
Democratic Senate investigators would not go on the record.
No.
Okay.
Burr did.
Okay.
They said this, one Democratic aide, we were never going to find a contract signed in blood saying, "Hey, Vlad, we're going to collude." My Lord in heaven.
Is that what it takes?
Give me a break already. Come on. The series of contacts between Trump's associates, his campaign officials, his children, and various Russian agents suggest a campaign willing to accept help from a foreign adversary, Democrats say. All right. Let me give you a good example. Okay. I went to a lot of concerts when I was growing up, right? Especially during the dark years. Like, I had a record of like 32 concerts in 1 year. I was very proud. I still have all the ticket stubs in a binder at home. It's a photo album, you know, with the sheets and all. Uh-huh. They put the photos on, but sure. I do put the ticket stubs. So anyway, when I would go to those concerts, you know what happens, Drew? Before and after, you got guys that are hanging out. You know what they're doing? They're offering you drugs for cheap, right? Every single time, because mm-hmm. that was the news in Los Angeles, right? I don't know if that matters anywhere, but in LA, be like, "Hey, you want some hash? You know, you want some pot? You want some meth? Whatever, right?" Every single time. You know what I did? No, I'm good. Nope. That's the comparison here is that, yeah, just because a bunch of Russians may have offered help and may have had conversations, That doesn't mean they actually went and did anything with it.
Right.
And any campaign would have done the same thing. And if we're going to go down that road, then can we please mention once again that the actual real collusion that we've talked about, that's documented, that's fact, was Fusion GPS, Hillary Clinton, Christopher Steele, the European dude.
Yeah, the fake dossier.
The fake dossier. That was all real.
The fake dossier.
Foreign is foreign.
Right. The fake dossier that, you know, without that, we would not have 2 years of a Mueller investigation. Without the fake dossier that was a product of foreign collusion by the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Ugh.
It's ridiculous. It's like we're living in bizarro land.
You're exactly right. That's what it feels like. I feel like... Which article did I put it on? Because I did notes to that very thing. I think I just threw it in the trash. Hold on a second.
While you're doing that, I'll take Rob's call. Rob from St. Peter. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to share some amusing incidents from down here in St. Peter in southwest Minnesota. As illustrated on the front page of the St. Peter Herald, our weekly newspaper... above the fold was a laudatory article on the MLK speech at Gustavus Adolphus College, our local college, with, you know, with diversity and inclusion in every paragraph.
Okay.
And then below the fold was an interesting story from my local middle school, where the Somali girls have formed gangs and are preventing white kids from using certain hallways. And then they beat up on some white girl by and pulling her hair. And fortunately, it was found, it was on video, so the school tried to cover it up. But when the parents saw the video, they got pretty excited. And guess who got suspended in that? The white girl. So we probably have more Somalis per capita than Cedar Riverside. It's really, and, you know, in the administration and the school board desperately tried to not let it be publicized, but it was. So it might be worth you in examining it in some segment in the next few days, if you could. You can get all the facts in the St. Peter Herald websites or the Mankato Free Press website.
I will look those up post-haste.
I will not.
Getting back to the... Because you're very busy. Because you have a lot going on.
Yeah.
You're very busy as the producer of Justice Drew. Drew, to what you were saying, we were right. We were you know, honed into each other like we were each other's children. Back to this piece, I wrote that. Okay, we were never going to find a contract signed in blood saying, hey, Velada, we're going to collude. It's like, yeah, it's like we live in the bizarro world. I feel like we're all independently, without rhyme or reason, being shuffled between two different parallel universes, right?
Right.
Like, I feel like everyone's just more like there's two different parallel universes, and we just keep getting moved in between the two of them. This whole idea, we were never going to find a contract signed in blood, that's all that the left has been saying about the Mueller investigation. That's all they've been waiting for, was the piece of evidence that shows, yeah, look, he did it, he colluded. It's been 2 years, for crying out loud.
Yeah, this is we're reading this article. This came out of NBC News, and it's dripping with bias. This article is dripping with bias, because they talk about how, you know, again, another anonymous Democratic Senate investigator quoted in this story saying, Donald Trump Jr. made clear in his messages that he was willing to accept help from the Russians. NBC goes on to add, those facts are beyond dispute, but they also have been known for some time and have not seemed to change Trump's political standing. They write with a slight tinge of disappointment.
Oh.
But we keep bringing it up and nobody seems to care, guys. Guys, this is super serial. Donald Trump Jr. was willing to accept help, guys, and nobody seems to care.
Right, and they shouldn't care. Because even if you believe that the Fusion GPS dossier was real, how is it any different? How is it any different? Because dudes from England are less scary than Russians? It's still a foreign entity out there helping you. If a foreign entity has information damaging to President Donald Trump, right? Hillary Clinton went and grabbed onto it. Any campaign would have gone to look at it to see what it was. It doesn't make a difference where they were from in Europe. It's still a foreign entity wanting to meddle in our elections. Give me a break and stop being so hypocritical.
I'm old enough to remember when Obama told Russian President Medvedev that he'll have more flexibility. Yeah. After the election. Nobody cared.
Yeah, because everybody loved Obama.
Yeah, as long as Democrats win, it's like nothing could have possibly gone wrong because we got the outcome that we wanted, right? The Democrat won. When a Republican wins, suddenly there has to be some sort of shenanigans in place because that just simply wasn't supposed to happen. And that's what this entire Russia investigation, the core of it is simply Donald Trump was not supposed to win.
This story was huge yesterday and has completely fallen by the wayside, not surprisingly, because of what it reveals. John Dowd, he left his role as Trump's lead attorney in March over differing views about how to cooperate to be with prosecutors, right? After spending nearly a year guiding the president's legal strategy, he forged a close relationship with Trump and continues to speak with him about the Russian probe. This was in a podcast for ABC. In one of the most in-depth interviews since departing Trump's legal team, he offered a view of the probe very much in line with that of the president, namely that it lacks merit. This is what he said. I know exactly what Mueller has. I know exactly what every witness said, what every document said. I know exactly what he asked. I know what the conclusion or result is. Describing the sweeping efforts, he went on to say, the Trump's legal team is assessing the case, speaking to dozens of witnesses. Based on that knowledge, Dowd said, there's no basis, no exposure. It's been a terrible waste of time. Dowd's overall view of the investigation, he called one of the greatest frauds this country has ever seen. Now, that differs sharply, of course, from justice officials who have a window into the probe, which to date have pried guilty pleas from five Trump advisors. Dowd went on record talking about how these are process crimes. They don't have anything to do with any type of Russia collusion. Known for his cantankerous demeanor and aggressive legal tactics, Dowd is a former Marine, a veteran of high-profile Washington investigation legal disputes. He worked to clear McCain during the Keating Five, involving the improper influence on behalf of the savings and loan. Cincinnati Red Star Pete Rose, he was with him as well. He said the president cooperated with the investigation and produced communications with the White House counsel that Mueller requested. He said that he personally told Trump to stop short of doing the interview.
Yeah.
But this has been probably the biggest insight that we've had into the Mueller investigation, right, from an individual who no longer is with the president and left sort of, not controversially, but didn't leave on the best grounds.
Right.
And he's sitting back going, I know everything and there's nothing there. He even went on to say he doesn't even think that Mueller will speak and that a report may not even be issued.
How... Oh, my God.
That would be amazing.
People would lose their flipping minds. If the Mueller investigation ended and Mueller was just like, okay, we're done with the investigation. All right, cool. Let's see the report, everybody.
Yeah, we got
it. No, we're just done.
We got it.
That's the report. Yeah. The report is that we finished.
Yeah, we're going to go get lunch.
Well, what'd you find?
Nothing.
I mean, we finished.
We locked those guys
up. We found the end.
Yeah. We locked those guys up. Those guys are in. Nothing to do with Russia, but we did lock those guys up.
When this thing ends and Donald Trump is exonerated and nothing happens to Trump, I mean, you think the world's insane right now.
Speaking of that, Veep Rider. Way to go, Drew, by the way. Good call on your comparisons.
But she is. She's Selena, what's her name, from Veep.
A Veep Rider has confirmed the rumor about staffer shaving Amy Klobuchar's legs inspired the joke on the HBO show.
Yeah. And I'm willing to bet that's not the only joke on that show that was inspired by a rumor regarding Amy Klobuchar. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Welcome back to your Wednesday edition. We're about 10 minutes out, 12 minutes out or so from being joined by Jesse Kelly, so stick around for that.
A Veep writer confirmed the HBO show's jokes about leg shaving was inspired by rumors that the newest Democratic presidential contender for 2020, Senator Amy Klobuchar, forced staffers to shave her legs. David Mandel told the Slate's Jeremy Stahl.
That's not true.
Stahl. It is a well-known rumor that we were told a million times by a million people. I once dry-shaved that woman's desk under her desk during a cabinet meeting.
What?
Yeah. No. That's a line from the show.
Yes. That's a line from the show.
Oh, that's not what...
That's a line from the show.
No, it's a line from the show. The fictional Veep staffer said about Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Okay.
Yeah. Her boss, Selena Meyer.
Yeah, once dry-shaved that woman's legs under her desk during a cabinet meeting. That's the joke that was on the show that was inspired by the rumors that have been circulating around about Amy Klobuchar for a long time.
Stahl disclosing his brother has worked on the show for the past two seasons, says the scene was written based on what the writers had heard about Klobuchar. So, like, nobody knows how to say Amy Klobuchar's name outside of Minnesota, but yet they know this.
And I've talked to a number of people that have worked on campaigns and have worked on, you know, on congressional staffs, and they all say the same thing, that, you know, the jokes on Veep are very much grounded in reality. You know, a lot of these politicians, these legislators, these elected officials, they're just running around, you know, with like chickens with their heads cut off, being directed where to go next by their staffers, having no clue. And everything is a veneer. Everything is fake. And to me, I mean, Amy Klobuchar epitomizes that stereotype.
Yeah. And the fact that the media isn't doing a full-throttle defense of Amy exposes the level of truth, especially combined with her lack of denial over the allegations that have been presented against her.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that just sort of reinforces this idea that, most of this, there's probably a certain, there are probably certain exaggerations that have been made, but overall, the fact that there's not a huge defense over this, the fact that the defense has been, this has kind of been well known for a while. You can't be tough if you're a woman.
Well, yes, exactly. It's not a defense. It's a deflection. They're not defending the rumors. They're not defending Amy Klobuchar from the allegations made by former staffers. They're deflecting. They're saying, well, yeah, but, you know, maybe she's just a tough boss. Maybe she just has really high expectations on her staff. Maybe she sets really high standards, and it's okay because she holds herself to those same standards. Nobody's denying any of this. Nobody's denying that she's an abusive boss that has created a hostile work environment that has made staffers afraid to even speak out, you know, and they're afraid to go on the record for fear of retribution. That's not okay. That is not okay behavior in any circumstance whatsoever. Yet, because it's Amy Klobuchar and because we love her here and she's so nice and she's been a senator for a really long time and her dad was a big deal, right? All of those little things play into the deflection that's going on. And it's right here in the Star Tribune story.
The Washington Post editorial on this, Amy Klobuchar workplace bully, bullying is a problem in our society, and it starts with leaders, all leaders. Drew, you're going to have to help me out, because I read this whole thing and taken some notes. I have no idea what point they're trying to drive home with this. So, they talk about Klobuchar hitting back hard against the allegations, which she didn't really hit back hard. She just says, yes, I can be tough, and yes, I can push people. Mm-hmm. That was in regards to the emails in the memo that was released from former staffers. I mean, she says, I can be tough and I can push people.
Let's not forget that, you know, when she first ran for the Senate, you know, progressive union leaders worked hard to against her. They did not want her to be the endorsed candidate. They did not want her to be the nominee because of the environment that she had created at the city attorney's office or the county attorney's office.
Klobuchar didn't need to say why she thought she was being judged more harshly because of sexism. Others already did it for her, the Washington Post story says. And a quote here that comes from Amy Siskind, typical sample, they say, these attacks from anonymous sources on Amy Klobuchar are a bunch of gendered BS, declared the activist. This story would have never been a story if it were Arthur Klobuchar.
That's not even true.
What fantasy world are you living? What parallel universe?
Even remotely true. The stories would have been amplified. They would have been louder. They would have been worse. And it would have been claims because, you know, what would have happened is they would have recognized that some of these staffers were female, right? So you had a male boss doing these things to female staffers, and he would have been held up as an example of why all male bosses and CEOs and why sexism is rampant in the workplace. And these are just some of the challenges that women have to deal with in the workplace, is bosses like this. But when it's Amy Klobuchar, everybody puts on their kid gloves. You know, they're afraid to kind of put it out there and call it for what it is, which is creating a hostile, abusive work environment of being an abusive boss. They're afraid to really call it out for what it is because they don't want to get accused of sexism.
And by the way, the story would never have been a story if it were the Arthur Klobuchar, Brett Kavanaugh.
Right.
I mean, come on. Come on. I mean, that's all you need to say.
Yeah.
The ridiculous nonsense that man was put through. The heinous, horrible, deplorable, wicked, evil, vile treatment that man was put through over salacious false allegations. And people actually have the audacity to say if it was Arthur Klobuchar, nobody would care. Oh, come on.
It's ridiculous. And then this whole editorial pivots in a weird, weird way. And it doesn't, you're right, John. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So they start off talking about Klobuchar and they're kind of deflecting the allegations and they're doing the typical sort of like, you know, it's only coming up because she's a woman. And then they write, but at the same time, we need to be honest. Bullying is a major problem in American culture. It starts at the top, of course, with the president.
He hasn't been accused of anything that Amy Klobuchar has been accused of.
It pivots into an anti-Trump editorial. It starts off
right as
let's talk about these allegations surrounding Amy Klobuchar, and then it pivots for the entire final three quarters to, oh yeah, Trump's awful.
Well, and then it even gets into our economy. It says our turbo capitalist economy.
What?
Where did that's a new one? Turbo capitalist economy.
I wish we lived in a turbo capitalist economy.
Seriously, I want to fuel my
better than just basic capitalist.
I want to fuel my flying ship with turbo capitalism.
I mean, if capitalism is good, turbo capitalism must be even better.
Our turbo capitalist economy teaches us that we should be in it for ourselves, that there are winners and losers, and that you can choose to be one or the other. U.S. business culture plays a role, but it goes beyond work. It's all around us. Workplace bullying undergirds more than a few hashtag MeToo stories as well. At the Takeaway, for instance, John Hockenberry was accused of not just sexually harassing female staffers and guests, but also bullying three female co-hosts. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I thought that loser, idiot, Amy Siskin activist just said that if it was Arthur Klobuchar, nobody would be talking about it. And yet, within the same article, there's John Hockenberry, who apparently was talked about for bullying three female hosts.
Yeah.
Yeah, they end this. Let's not let the desire for a female president bind us to the reality of all this.
Yeah, because you know what happens when you start using the word bind in an Amy Klobuchar piece, you get hit in the face.
Yeah, you do. Yeah,
you get hit right in the face.
We don't know what the binder's filled with, but it's heavy and it hurts. When it comes to the matter of treating others with respect, we should seek to raise the standard. Men need to meet, not lower it, so women can join in on our nation's bully fest.
Wait, what?
We don't need to replace one bully with another. We deserve better than that. I have no idea what they're saying.
So are they saying don't support Amy Klobuchar?
I don't know.
It kind of feels like it ended on that note, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to replace one bully with another, and they clearly think Donald Trump's a bully.
I don't know what it's trying to do. I know it's causing me not to want to read Washington Post articles. That's what it's causing me to do. I don't know what it was supposed to do.
I feel bullied by the Washington Post.
I do. I feel like I need I feel like I need a shower and like a hug. Some icy hot.
Well, that's
for being pushed
that's
around.
Kind of standard.
Yeah, that's.
It is the day before Valentine's
Day. It is true. Yeah. I could use both those things, actually.
Well, maybe Jesse Kelly
especially
will come and provide you with...
Yes. I'm sure Jesse Kelly is going to give me the emotional support that I desire.
The mental embrace that you so need at this time.
Yeah. Hot takes coming up with JesseKelly.com. Hey. Twin Cities News. Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. It is Justice and Drew along with Sam, who is screening your phone calls. If you missed her top five this morning, you can check it out on the iHeart or radio app on the podcast once the show is over.
Watch out, Jesse!
Twitter provocateur, contributor to The Federalist, fellow iHeart Radio talk host, and dear friend of the show, Supreme Leader Jesse Kelly. Good morning, sir.
This is a great morning, fellas. I haven't even put on pants yet.
Is that part of why it's great? I don't, you know what, don't answer that. Called, don't, you know what?
It's called freedom.
It's called freedom.
It is called freedom.
This is America, and I'm a man, and I don't have to wear pants if I don't want to.
I might go to the store like this.
Your Twitter account is Jesse Kelly DC, correct?
Yes.
And where Jesse can Kelly people DC. And where can people find your show during the week if they want to get some of the specifics out of the way? Where can people listen to you every day?
They can actually find it. Just go to iHeart and look up Jesse Kelly Show. Every show will be there for your listening enjoyment, and it is probably the best show ever.
I mean, you know, top three. After
yeah.
ours.
Yeah. Well, barely. Come on. It is Jesse. Hey, so it's fascinating to watch these various stories play out. We've been talking about, Amy Klobuchar. We're going to talk a little bit here about Ilhan Omar, and of course, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the latest on Ilhan Omar. It's a story here out of Daily Wire. Vice President Mike Pence slammed anti-Semitic Representative Ilhan Omar on Tuesday night following her anti-Semitic tirade over the weekend, saying that her apology was inadequate and she should face consequences. The goalposts, Jesse, have shifted. Keith Ellison was rightfully condemned. It didn't matter, unfortunately. Doug Wardlow lost that attorney general's race, but he was rightly condemned for the alleged meeting with Farrakhan. Ilhan has crossed that line over and over again with her blatant comments, her anti-Semitic comments on Twitter. You look at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I'll give you one other example, and then get your thoughts on this. We used to rightfully mock individuals who openly declared that they were socialists. And now we don't do that nearly as much as we used to. I don't like the fact that these goalposts have now shifted, and these things that used to be condemned much quicker seem to be allowed and more acceptable.
Yeah, I like it. To be honest, I like it. I like it that the veil has been removed. Don't lie to me anymore. I like that she's honest about it. That's who she is. She's an anti-Semitic piece of trash. That's who she is. But she's not lying to me about it. I now know that's who she is. That's who the Democrats are. They've been socialists for two decades now. They really ramped it up under Obama. Now they're just calling themselves that, and I appreciate that. Don't tell me you're a Democrat. You're not. You're a socialist. You believe in, that Green New Deal is flat-out communism.
Yeah.
Be honest with me about it. Now I can see you for what you are.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, I think it's fine. You know, I wish the media would be honest about who they are. Mm. When they cover the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortezes and the Ilhan Omars, they would be honest about who they are, what they represent, and what they believe. There is no reason, based on Ilhan Omar's background, her activism, the causes that she's been involved with, the things that she said and tweeted long before she ever got into politics, it doesn't take a 60 Minutes investigative reporter to figure out that she holds strong anti-Israel views, that she holds strong views that are in line with the Council of American Islamic Relations, which, you know, how is that any different? How is CARE any different than AIPAC when it comes to the efforts that they do, that they make on the lobbying front? They're not different at all. But, you know, when Ilhan Omar was running in the primary up here to be the candidate in CD5, and you know, Jesse, you're not familiar with the district. The running in the primary is basically winning the general in that district. There's no way a Democrat, anybody but a DFLer, was going to win that seat. So the primary was the general. And when she was running in the primary, the only conversation, you know, we were allowed to have on sort of a mainstream media level is, Isn't this cool? We got a Somali American, first female Muslim to be in Congress, first Somali American. Aren't we great? Aren't we progressive? Aren't we hip?
Yeah, and why is that the only conversation we're allowed to have? When did we get to that point that we can't have a frank discussion? Why can't we discuss immigration? People complain about these radicals like Omar being there. She's not there by accident. She gets elected from an area of Minneapolis known as Little Somalia. Somalia is a place where 98% of girls go through female genital mutilation. Mm. It's always in the top 10 in terrorist activity in the world. How many Somalis should we take in as immigrants to the United States of America? Maybe it's a lot, maybe it's none, but that's a conversation we should be allowed to have without being accused of racism or being a nationalist or something like that. We can have that conversation. We have 150,000 Somali immigrants living in the United States of America, 57,000 in the Minnesota area. That's a conversation we can have. Is that healthy? Is that good for the country? Is it not?
Well, and this is clearly, and I have a question for you at the end of this little rant, but there's a lengthy New York Times piece that was done a while back, glorified and vilified, Representative-elect Ilhan Omar tells critics just deal. It highlights the 12-year-old refugee adjusting to life in Virginia who fended off bullies, who stuck gum on her scarf, knocked her down, jumped on her when she changed clothes, and she said this: "My father sat me down and he said, listen, these people who are doing these things of you, they're not doing something to you because they dislike you. Her father told her, they're doing something to you because they feel threatened in some way by your existence. Look, this was something that she grew up with. It was in an area where she grew up. This is the bubble that she was in. This is what she believes. The question I have for you is, should we even bother asking her to apologize? You know, in a world where societal norms have set the standard, sure, the things that she's been saying have been very offensive. But at the same time, you know, she doesn't need to apologize unless she's genuine about it, and she's not. She's not genuine in her apologies. So I'm wondering if we'd be better served just going, hey, thank you for letting us know who you are. No need to apologize. It's all laid out right there. Maybe we need to stop saying, you know, don't apologize.
Stop,
own it.
Stop demanding apologies from people when they are simply saying what they believe.
So I'm totally with you both. I don't need an apology from really anybody. Apologies are for close family and friends. I don't understand why we ever demand these public apologies from celebrities and politicians, and certainly not somebody like Omar. That's who she is. That's what she is. That's how she was raised. That's her value system. I think it's disgusting, but don't apologize to me for it. Thanks for telling me what you believe. That's what the people in her district wanted. That's now she's in the Congress. She's on the Foreign Relations Committee. That is scary.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's downright frightening. I just, kind of going back to the original point, I'm with you. I like the fact that the shine and the it's off. We're outside the matrix, right? And this is the example we keep using, and it fits. You know, when Obama's in office, when there's a Democrat in office, the media goes along with it, everybody's fine and happy, and it's all great and all that, you know. But then you get a Trump wins, and suddenly, oh, nope, we're all going to be yanked out of the matrix now. We're going to see what the world's really like, and everything's on display. I appreciate it this way, but it takes a bit of working through to adjust. And when you realize that, you know what, the standards are shifting a bit, and we're really starting to see what the left really, really stands for. And right now, Trump's got nothing to worry about in 2020 based off of what we've seen so far.
Yeah, the left stands for power. I mean, you saw that Democrat, his name escapes me, on the news the other day talking about the AG in Virginia, how he should not resign, he should not bow out of office, because then you risk a conservative getting in there. And the more important thing is keeping an AG that'll uphold liberal things. He flat out said it. He said the quiet part you're not supposed to say. And I appreciate that. That's what politics is. It's all a power game. I don't need your apologies. I don't need your lies. Win elections so we can defeat you. That's what it's become. Well, frankly, it's what it's always been.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's, you know, and we mentioned you earlier, and I wanted to bring you in on this. In keeping with this theme, you know, the Republicans need to do a better job of calling these individuals out in the middle of these campaigns. And the examples that we gave was one, Ilhan Omar, you know, didn't have to debate here locally. The media completely left her alone. You know, she wasn't vetted at all. And I don't know if it would have changed anything in regards to the outcome of that particular election, but the GOP and conservatives certainly could have been more aggressive. How is it that the opposition research wasn't done on Northam in Virginia prior to him winning that election, of the stuff that was exposed, you know, afterwards? And we mentioned you from the standpoint of when you were running against a former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords at the time. I remember the talk was, of course, about civility, and we got to run clean campaigns, and we can't, we're all tired of the negative ads. And, you know, those days are gone. The left has nuked the idea of civility, and I think that it would be wise for the GOP to stand in truth and be a little bit more forthright in who these people really, really are, and not cave to so much of the criticism when they're simply speaking the truth.
Correct. They cave to the media is what they cave to. They're so worried about bringing up something damaging on their opponent that the media will disapprove of. Oh, you can't go there. Oh, you shouldn't say this. Oh, you shouldn't do that. No, screw them. They're against you anyway. It's combat now. Win the election. You're right. Now, how do they not go through his yearbook? How, especially in a state like Virginia, a critical state like Virginia, which can swing either way, even though it's pretty much blue now, you should have gone all in to defeat that guy. But you didn't, and were left to, I believe one of his classmates was the one that actually dug up the yearbook to reveal it after he said something stupid about abortion.
You know what's funny about this whole yearbook scandal? If this were a Republican, right? You know what's been missing in this whole conversation and this whole coverage of the yearbook scandal is interviews with his classmates. Where are the intrepid journalists in Virginia hunting down all of the interviews with all of the classmates that are also in that yearbook so that they could, you know, either confirm or debunk this idea that that blackface and KKK hoods were common and that there's a bunch of racists there? It's just not happening. But you remember with Kavanaugh, when they found his yearbook, they could not wait to go and interview everybody they possibly could to try to get some idea of what Kavanaugh was really like in high school. But that's it's mysteriously missing in this coverage.
Yeah, that's journalism now. If there's a hole in the ground and journalists are walking by it and it's a Democrat scandal, they'll peek in to say they looked into it and they'll keep on walking. And if it's a Republican, they'll stop, they'll get on their knees, they'll look inside, they'll call in an excavator, and they'll dig to the center of the earth to find the bottom of
it. Jesse Kelly, once again, where and when and what time can people check out your show on the iHeartRadio app?
7 o'clock Central every night, Monday through Friday. We'll have a new show tonight, KPRC in Houston, or just go to iHeart. Everybody in the country can listen live, or at Jesse Kelly DC on Twitter. I'm really amazing.
Great talking to you as always, buddy.
You are really amazing. Talk to you next week, bud.
We wanted to share this. There's a story out of the Pioneer Press today. Last year, before she was elected to the House of Representatives, before she emerged from the crowded Democratic field in Minnesota's liberal 5th District, leaders of the Minneapolis Jewish community fashioned what could be described as an anti-Semitic intervention of Omar. Right, it's relevant because obviously she's come under fire because of her tweets as of late. So you did have Jewish leaders talking with Ilhan Omar about anti-Semitism last year.
But last year,
yeah,
a whole year ago,
yep.
And she's still throwing out anti-Semitic tropes on Twitter.
I guess it didn't work.
But she says she's learning.
No, she's not. No, she's learning that other people around her don't like what she believes. But that's what she's learning.
She says she's understanding how her words impact people.
But,
and she didn't know that these were tropes, John.
I know.
She's so full of it.
Ben Shapiro out of Daily Wire, he's Jewish. Won't play you the audio because his voice is annoying. But what he has to say is fantastic. Okay. He wrote this in a recent piece. Okay. And again, he's He's very grounded in his faith, okay? He says, anti-Semitism now thrives inside the Democratic Party. Rashida Tlaib wrote a piece for Louis Farrakhan back in 2006. She's welcomed in the party. Linda Sarsour continues to be an ally of the new Democratic fresh faces, as well as more established names like Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, right? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez holds conference calls with vicious British anti-Semite Jeremy Corbyn to no serious blowback from the Democratic Party. Keith Ellison, now Attorney General of Minnesota, was nearly made the head of the DNC after engaging in blatant anti-Semitism for years. How has the Democratic Party morphed into the party of anti-Semitism? He says by embracing the philosophy of intersectionality on the one hand, and by embracing the myth that anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism are completely separate from the other. The former provides the emotional impetus for a nodding at Jew hatred. The latter provides the intellectual framework for doing so. And he, look, he's absolutely right. This whole assessment, the philosophy of intersectionality has othered Jews from the intersectional coalition. And that's basically built on the premise that the prevailing Western system of thought has victimized various groups and that those groups must band together in order to destroy that system, right? Jews are simply too financially educational and educationally politically successful to have been seen by any other members of the power structure. The slurs against them must be from other victimized groups. And he's absolutely right in his assessment. And they're not calling it out. And it's only going to get worse.
And she's going to probably hold that seat in CD5. I would say as long as she wants to, but the truth is it's as long as the activists in the inner city, in the core DFL want her to, because that's who really controls that seat.
Hey, is that the sun out?
Oh my goodness.
Is Whoa. It a little bit? Little bit.
Sun is out. The temperatures are rising and snow is not falling from the sky. Get out and enjoy this beautiful day. Be safe. Stay warm.
But
we'll be back tomorrow with Katie Pavlich. Katie Pavlich from Fox News on the show tomorrow. It's beautiful. Shush.
5 degrees.
Shush. I don't give me generation. Give me true communication.